looks at conformal cosmology. It is basically a theory of cosmology that leads you through smoothly through the Big Bang. I find Roger's arguments rather good, not complete, not overwhelming, and certainly not compelling, but nevertheless good enough to take them seriously. But what's probably most interesting is that Roger predicts certain things, and the observations seem to be confirming them. I'll spend more time on the observations towards the end of the talk. One of the reasons that I take Roger's idea here seriously is the competing ideas for the Big Bang seem to me far, far worse and more unbelievable on the large than Roger's ideas. Some of the alternate theories of the Big Bang is a great one. There's the ekpyrotic universe that has two three-dimensional brains moving in a higher dimensional space, and they collide, and that is the source of the Big Bang. Now, that's a serious theory, but two well-known people, Turek and Steinhardt. There was another one proposed, I think it was by Engelbert Schuching, that you can analytically continue the Friedman, Roberts, and Walker's solutions around the initial singularity and go back into a previous time. Another one that was very, very heavily promulgated in the early years was that the Einstein equations would allow for a periodic solution where there would be an expansion, then a collapse, and then a bounce, and you can repeat the things all over. There were also attempts at that time, in the 70s or 80s, of adding torsion terms to the Einstein equations. The Poles promulgated that idea that the torsion would help in the bounce that take place. Now I understand, but I don't have any knowledge of, that loop quantum gravity and string theory apparently have explanations for the Big Bang. The most prevalent and widely accepted explanation of the Big Bang is that there was nothing there at all, and suddenly the universe came into being. You don't have to explain anything, that's the way it was, and you don't do that's it. It requires no explanation, it's just true. If you want to push a little bit, somebody might have done something about it, but it was not something to even discuss. An aside, a thought. Many years ago, maybe 30 years ago, I got a telephone call from a well-known American astronomer, Robert Jastrow. He was the director of the NASA Goddard Center. He asked me, did I not believe, I being a relativist, did I not believe that the Big Bang was proof of the existence of God? I stayed away from it. I didn't answer him. But then I found an interview that he gave with the magazine Christianity Today. It's just worth reading. Astronomers now found that they have painted themselves into a corner because they have proven by their own methods that the world began abruptly in an act of creation to which you can trace the seeds of every star, every planet, every living thing in the cosmos and the earth. And they have found that all this happened as a product of forces that we cannot hope to discover, that there was what I or anyone would call supernatural forces at work is now, I think, a scientifically proven fact. I think you should really remember that, okay? When I ask some of the proponents of inflationary cosmology, where did they get their initial conditions? They had initial conditions before the inflation. They had to put that into the inflationary scenario. I get no answer. I get a shrug of shoulders. They say, who cares? They're rather circumspect about it, but I can't get a real good answer. Where did the initial conditions come from? They're diplomatic about it, but I just can't get any answer to it at all. Roger Penrose's proposal, the CCC, certainly stays far closer to conventional physics than most of the other proposals for explaining the Big Bang. It's the only one, to my knowledge, with one exception. Tolman in the 30s or 40s tried to include thermodynamics into general relativity. But no one else, to my knowledge, puts and considers the second law of thermodynamics to be an integral part of the theory. Roger certainly does that. He takes that very, very seriously. His book, what's the name of his book? The book on
CCC, isn't it?
CCC.
Cycles of time.
What?
Cycles of time. Edit?
Yes.
Okay.
Cycles of time.
Cycles of time, yeah. He spends about a third of the book on the second law of thermodynamics. It plays such a big role in his thinking. Penrose posits, he assumes right from the beginning, that at the time of the Big Bang, we'll have very, very low entropy. And he measures the entropy from the strength of the Weyl tensor. And to get very low entropy, he says that the Weyl tensor has to be very, very small. In fact, this is one of his hypotheses. He calls it the Weyl tensor hypothesis, that it takes the Weyl tensor to be vanishing at the time of the Big Bang. It's not directly connected, but it plays such a role in Roger's mind, and I see it no place else, that I thought I'd give you Eddington's admonition. The law that entropy always increases holds, I think, the supreme position among the laws of nature. If someone points out to you that your pet theory of the universe is in disagreement with Maxwell's equations, then so much the worse for Maxwell's equations. If it is found to be contradicted by observation, well, these experimentalists do bungle things sometimes. But if your theory is found to be against the second law of thermodynamics, I can give you no hope. There is nothing for it to collapse, but to collapse in deep humiliation. And this is a quote from The Nature of the Physical World, of Eddington. Now, what is the CCC? The basic idea of CCC is that there's going to be something repetitive, there's going to be something periodic in cosmology. There's going to be sections of the cosmos that he calls aeons. I don't even know how to pronounce it. It's a portion of the universe. Each aeon, begins with a big bang and ends with the sitter-like infinite expansion. And the idea then is how to go from transition from one aeon to the next. The picture is something like this. Each of these barrels represents an aeon. They're glued together. The base of one is glued to the top of the other. By glued, I mean the points are identified. There's infinite rescaling so that the metrics can be conformally related at this time of joining, at the time of the gluing. A major issue is how to do this transition between the end of an aeon, called the referred to as the previous aeon, and the Big Bang, through the Big Bang to the next aeon, our present aeon. Penrose's theory CCC requires that physics at the late stages of any aeon and the early stages of the next aeon, the physics has to be conformally invariant. By conformally invariant, I mean that the metric GAB has to be equivalent to a positive scale factor omega squared times the metric. That's a complete equivalence there. This also requires that the matter fields also be conformally invariant. And this leads to the requirement that that the stress energy tensor be trace free at the end of any aeon and at the beginning of the next aeon. This, in turn, requires that all rest mass must have evaporated at the time of the transition between the aeons. The new rest mass is then generated shortly after the Big Bang by some mechanism that Roger does not have. He refers to it sometimes as there's a Higgs phenomena and an anti-Higgs phenomena taking place, but he's not made there's no detailed theory of that at all. This might be the weakest point of the whole CCC. On the other hand, Roger points out there's an awful long time to wait between now and the end of our present eon, 10 to the 100 years or something like that. And he also points out that there is no Casimir invariant. We don't have the Poincaré group. We have we don't even have the de Sitter group. So there's no reason to expect the mass to be a constant. At the transition, you have to make sure that the metric blows up at the transition. That you have to make sure that your cosmological, your conformal factor also becomes infinite at that time to take care of that infinity. Just showed in Roger's notation, the G with the hat on it is the metric of the previous eon. The notation is there's a past light cone there, then there's a metric of a transition region, then there's a metric of the present region with a forward going light cone attached to it. And the metrics are related by some capital omega squared and little omega squared. The little omega is the inverse, negative inverse of the capital omega. And the question is, how do you choose this conformal factor to go for? It's a detailed classical theory with classical evolution equations to take you through the Big Bang. How do you choose that conformal factor? How do you choose this capital omega or the little omega? Roger says, let's choose it that it satisfies the Amabi equation. The Amabi equation is a differential equation well known in classical differential geometry. It's the differential equation for a conformal factor taking you between two metrics that both have constant Ricci scalar. In the case of the CCC, the two Ricci scalars are to be the same constant, the cosmological constant, same positive cosmological constant. There is the equation block omega plus 2 omega is 2 omega to the third is the version of the Amabi equation that Roger uses. The block operator is constructed from the transition metric. Just for the fun of it, I found this absolutely intriguing. It didn't work out, but I just had so much fun with the idea. If you take in the Amabi equation there, if you take the two twos and change them to minus twos, you get a classical differential, you get a partial differential equation that happens to be identical to the classical version of the Higgs field. So we wanted to make this into this omega to be a Higgs type field. And all you have to do is change the signs. But I was convinced that there's something wrong with the conventions, that if you just take the metric and just take the negative of the metric, that everything works out well. It didn't. Now comes the question, is there any observational confirmation? Roger thinks of the idea that each eon is going to be in some sense similar to any other eon. The basic overall structure is going to be the same. There's going to be matter, there's going to be galaxies formed, there's going to be clusters of galaxies formed. And Roger says that each eon evolves, there's going to be in a cluster of galaxies, there's going to be collisions between galaxies in a cluster. There might be more than one, and if it's a big cluster, you might have a whole series of collisions of galaxies. With each collision, there's going to be a huge amount of gravitational radiation emitted. The gravitational radiation is going to be in the form of the Weyl tensor, actually, technically, in terms of a rescaled version of the Weyl tensor. This gravitational radiation is going to go smoothly through the Big Bang into crossover, and it's going to intersect then with the surface of last scattering. And the idea that Penrose proposes is that this gravitational radiation is going to give the matter in the surface of last scattering a kick. And it will be moving, and we were going to see a Doppler shift of the either red or blue, depending on the geometry of the situation, that we're going to be able to see the effect in form of circles in the CMB sky. So the prediction is that on the CMB sky, there'll be very weak families of red or blue shifted concentric families of circles. This was seriously proposed and seriously laughed at very, very much. This is the picture that Roger had in mind. At the bottom, we have the violent event of the previous aeon. That was a collision of two galaxies. The gravitational radiation, the form of the light cone, goes through the blue surface smoothly. Then it hits, is that yellow? Or
green, I'm colorblind. Green, lime green.
It's green?
Purple and lime green. It's like an LLB.
Okay. Whatever the color is, lime, blue or yellow or green. Okay. It goes through and intersects with the surface of layer scattering. You have the intersection of the light cone with a three-dimensional surface is going to be in the form of a sphere. And now if us up in the top looks back, our sky, our CMB sky, is a sphere. So we're going to have a sphere of where we can look at when we look up at the sky with the CMB data. And it's going to be intersecting the sphere of the violent event of the previous aeon, and that's going to give you a circle. And that's what Penrose proposes that we should look for on the CMB data. See if we can see any circles. So he proposes more than one circle. He proposes a family of circles because of the fact that they'll have clusters of galaxies. This is his picture again. That in the center of the top here, we have a family of galaxies here, a galactic cluster, and every now and then one of the members are going to collide with another member and give rise to a violent event, and it's going to go through the Big Bang surface and hit the last scattering surface, and then blue shift or red shift the matter that is there. Depending on the geometry, some of it will be moving away from us, some of it will be moving towards us, so some of the families will be redshifted, some of the families will be blue-shifted. Grzagin of the Yerevan State University in Armenia began, who's on the WMAP team, he was beginning to analyze the WMAP data, and he claimed early on to have seen many of these families, both blue-shifted and redshifted. This was greeted by the most unbelievable howl of horrible criticisms. This was criticisms against Roger, against Grzagin, gibberish, stupid, ignorant circles. The circles were purely statistic artifacts. These guys don't understand statistics. I even found 2 days ago online, somebody said that has Penrose entered his old age loonyhood? Penrose and Grzagin answered the main question about are these statistical artifacts by taking the CMB sky and twisting it, holding the North Pole fixed and the region around the North Pole basically fixed, and as you move towards the South Pole, rotating and twisting the data on the CMB sky. And now they were looking for circles on the twisted sky, the data from the twisted sky, and there are still circles, they can still see familiar circles for a small value of the parameter S. But as the value of the parameter S increased, the circles started disappearing. They considered that this was a very, very strong, overwhelming argument against the claim that their circles were statistical artifacts, accidents. This is a picture of Grzagin's analysis of the CMB sky. There's the mass region in the center around the equator, and you can see big families of circles that he claims to see in the data. He really had a very terrible time with referees on this thing, lambasted all over the place. Several big names actually came to their rescue
Proceedings of the Royal Society?
What?
Sorry, one of the Royal Soc?
What were you going to say?
One of the journals, I can't remember.
Phil Trans, Roysoft, Brock Roysoft.
Brock Roysoft. Then, several years later, a completely independent group from Warsaw, they also analyzed the WMAP data. Just as an aside, one of the members of that group was a close friend of mine, and he told me beforehand that they were setting out to show how wrong Roger was. They had no conviction that Roger was right. They were going to show that Roger was wrong. They analyzed the data with a completely different search algorithm than the Gerzagin used, completely different methods. They also found the same families of circles in their first paper using the WMAP first. They found them blue shifted and red shifted as Roger had predicted. They did it first with the WMAP data, and then they did it again with the Planck data. Now I have to say something more at the end because I just got fresh information. I got an email from them on Monday. I'll tell you about that at the end. There's new information there. They find basically that the Polish group finds basically that their circles appear where the data overlaps, where the analysis overlaps, that they're seeing the same sets of circles that the Gerzagin does. Oops, let me go back. Okay. There's still much to be clarified. The physics of how does the mass evaporate and reappear is still a very open question. The observation still must be confirmed. I think that there's some form of CC has a reasonable chance, but I didn't thank you yet. Since this is so new, I didn't put it onto a transparency. At the last GR meeting, the director of the Planck effort, the Planck analysis team. I can't remember his name. Does anybody know?
Estafio.
What?
No, Estafio.
He was very, very skeptical about the Polish group's analysis. But they were able to, he was a speaker at the GR meeting, and they were able to corral him, and they sat down. He sat down with them for several hours. And they told me afterwards that he came away very, very impressed. He did not necessarily believe them, but he was impressed with how well they had done a job of analyzing the data. And he told them a whole series of things that they had to do more to convince him or to convince the Planck team. None of this is written up. This is word of mouth that people were telling me about. Then the Poles were going to do the same analysis that they did with the WMAP, but they were going to do it with the Planck, with the first Planck map. And they ran into technical problems with their codes. They simply couldn't finish it. Then about 2 months ago, I got a very, very brief email from one of the Poles saying that things are going well now, and we seem to be confirming Penrose's predictions, and they seem to be agreeing with the Gerzagin's result. Then on this Monday evening, as I was getting ready to pack to come here, I got a paper from the Poles. They don't want me to give much information about the paper, since they are preparing it right now. It's in the process of being prepared, and my feeling is one of the reasons that they want to keep it under lid so tightly is that they want to show this data to the Planck people. That's my conjecture, but they really told me to be very, very discreet when I come here to talk, and they gave me a statement that I'm allowed to read. When examining, I read their paper. It's a very, very technical paper with high levels of sophistication and statistical analysis, but okay. When examining the WMAP data, the Polish group found clear evidence the clusters of circles, the circles are real with a 99.7% confidence level. They have recently analyzed the Planck data, and the results are the same as the WMAP data. So that came from this past Monday, a paper that is now being prepared. With that, I end it. Thank you.
So now we take a half-hour break, and we'll reconvene on schedule 11:15 for questions and discussion. We have an hour and 15 minutes for questions and discussion. So,
how much time do we have now?
So you know, just a few.
It's a few. And he's actually in
yeah, I've talked to him. It sounds extremely brilliant.
I mean, I spoke with him.
When is the end?